This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, COSATU's plan to use government employees' pensions money via the PIC to help stabilise Eskom by reducing its mammoth 450 billion rand debt pile and help place its balance sheet on a far better keel has drawn a lot of attention since it was published almost 2 weeks ago. It's published with support from the Alternative Economic Development Centre based in Cape Town. We chatted to the AIDC last week. It does occupy a space on the economic left. It uses words like neoliberal. And it's also a report that has received a lot of criticism from many other quarters. One such critique was published in Business Day today. It was written by IntelliDex chairman Stuart Theobald. And I believe my producer is struggling to get Stuart on the line. And we've also got issues trying to get Nazmira Muller on the line. Nazmira, do we have you? I believe we've got you now.
Yes, I've just
brilliant.
Gotten it.
Oh, fantastic. So kick us off while we try and get Stuart on the line. He wrote an excellent critique in Business Day today. What do you make of the plan with support from the AIDC, but really a COSATU plan, to use government employees' pension money to help stabilise Eskom?
Michael, I think we need to start off by acknowledging the fact that what COSATU is trying to do is deal with this issue, that they've looked at the fact that government seems to keep kicking the can down the road on finding a solution, and they've actually put something on the table. We may not agree with large portions of it, and I have concerns, but I think first off, let's acknowledge that they are trying to actually find a solution rather than just ignoring it.
Well, I think it's a good departure point, because really the seriousness of the situation has meant that we're starting to engage around the pragmatic center of what could potentially be a solution. And obviously no one wants the lights to go off, and I think superficially to use government employees' pension money to help stabilize Eskom, considering that it was largely under the ANC's watch that a lot of the issues at the state-owned enterprise occurred, it does tend to look like a good solution. The problem, though, is whether or not this can in fact be done. Looking at Stuart's numbers and the amounts that could be potentially invested by the likes of the Development Bank of Southern Africa, the IDC, and the Government Employees Pension Fund, if you do the maths, all three of them would struggle to get up to that 250 billion mark.
I think the numbers are large, and it's going to be difficult to get there. There are a couple of other options that can be put on the table. But I think the bigger question for me is finding a financial solution without an operational solution for Eskom means that any financial package would just be a temporary band-aid. We need to resolve the cost structure at Eskom, and that is primarily the coal costs and secondarily the labor costs, before we look at a balance sheet issue. Because otherwise, all you're going to do is buy Eskom 5 years and we'll be back in the same situation we are right now.
Which speaks to moral hazard. We've got Stuart Theobald on the line from London now. Stuart, talking to your article's key points with Nazmira while we're trying to get you on the line, sorry about that. The issue around how much can be invested without hitting prudential investment limits is an important one. Just take us through the numbers.
Well, the three institutions that have been mentioned in the COSATU documents, so the DBSA, the IDC, and then the GEPF, each have balance sheets that are obviously finite, like any balance sheet, and any financial institution has to manage the risk that they take onto that balance sheet. So that would include risks like the concentrated exposure to single entities. They want to spread their eggs over many baskets so you don't end up overexposed to a particular borrower. Now, in a bank, the global standard for risk management is known as Basel III, and that sets various kinds of risk limits that no bank should expose themselves to. Now, neither the DBSA or the IDC are, strictly speaking, required to comply with Basel III, but it does set a benchmark that they would find themselves in trouble if they violated. That's because they raise funding in the market, and ultimately people are buying the bonds that they issue. So if they find themselves taking on undue risk, they're going to find their cost of their own funding increase. So if you look at the numbers, an institution like the DBSA, which has a balance sheet of just less than 90 billion rand, on the standard Basel framework, the biggest single exposure they could take without completely violating risk guidelines is about 9.2 billion rand. If you look at the IDC on the same basis, the maximum exposure is about 24 billion rand. And of course, both of these institutions already have Eskom exposure, or exposure to similar kinds of assets that would count in the concentration measurement. So you look at those numbers and you're nowhere near the 250 billion, that Kusatu speaks of. So if you turn to the government employees pension fund now, there the numbers are much bigger. You have a balance sheet of over 2 trillion rand, so an investment portfolio that really is massive. But within that investment portfolio, there's already significant exposure to Eskom bonds. There's, in the last annual report, 85 billion rands worth of Eskom bonds that the GEPF holds. Now, that is 50% of the public sector debt that the fund holds, and it's about 15% of the entire fixed income asset allocation in that portfolio. Now, in an investment portfolio, your object is to maximize return and minimize risk. And when you're pursuing that objective, there are very clear rules and guidelines on how you balance your exposures against each other. And overexposing yourself to one entity comes at the price of your overall financial position. And we know in the case of the GEPF that its financial position is underwritten by the government. So any weakness in its financial position becomes a weakness in the government's position. It just directly feeds into the overall government balance sheet. And that includes some ideas like switching the Eskom debt into equity, which would directly and very quickly mean an increased liability for government.
There's a lot of interconnection here because the government employees pension fund through the PIC invests the bulk of its funds in South Africa on the JSE. And the problem is if Eskom collapses or folds in a heap, then returns from all of those JSE listed investments, those that certainly derive revenue from South Africa, so many derive their revenue offshore now as well, will also be impacted. So the bottom line is that we do need to find a solution. There's risk and contagion throughout all of this, though. I want to touch on the issue of moral hazard, though, which Nazmira Muller raised, because what I see through this is the ability, if we go down this path, to delay the unavoidable restructuring of an SOE like Eskom. And there's also a serious risk of Kusatu saying something like, well, the workers have been prepared to chip in, so why don't we usher in prescribed assets? And that's also something of a misnomer, because it's a defined benefit fund, so we as the taxpayers are standing good for it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, moral hazard refers to situations where people don't suffer the consequences of their actions. And if there are no consequences, then, of course, you're removing an important disciplinary effect that needs to operate in our society. When you do wrong, when you mess up a company, it's got to cost you. You don't just get a free handout to get you out of trouble. We risk really removing the incentives of the market if we come to some form of rescue that isn't the right structure. But I heard Nazmira saying that, you know, critical here is the right operating model for Eskom going forward. It has to find a way to function without losing money. Otherwise, any bailout is simply temporary until we reach a point after more has been lost and it has to be done again. That's the kind of moral hazard we cannot have. And it really requires a believable and credible operating plan for Eskom before any financial solution can be made, because that's the only way you're going to manage moral hazard risks here. You don't just get a blank check when everything goes wrong to go ahead and do it again.
Nazmira, just to end off quickly, what should be done? Bottom line, what are government's options when it comes to fixing Eskom's finances?
Eskom is going to need to be recapitalized at some point in time. And whether that is by the government taking on a large portion of the debt onto their balance sheet, or whether that is something along the lines of using the PIC. Personally, I don't have a massive issue using the PIC because, as both of you have mentioned, at the end of the day, taxpayers stand behind that pension fund. So should we just be transferring it into government bonds and paying interest on that, or finding another solution? I'm open to that, provided there is an operational plan that has already been implemented. So what I think should happen is, if we're going to consider this, we need a plausible operational plan. We need to see it largely implemented before you look at any debt-to-equity conversion and any involvement by the GPS. And that's the only way I think those trustees are going to be able to wrap their minds around it.
Nazmira Muller, head of SA Investments and Investing Asset Management, and Stuart Theobald, chairman of Intellidex, wading into Kasatu's Eskom plan. Is it unworkable? Well, not necessarily, provided there are the right conditions and operational plans put in place.